It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Student loans are now second to mortgages when it comes to personal debt. With more than $1 trillion worth of debt, student loans have surpassed the nation's credit card debt. The average Pennsylvania college student winds up with about $27,500 worth of debt. This time of year, high school seniors are getting college acceptance letters in the mail. Would students and cosigners be less willing to take out tens of thousands of dollars in student loans if they really understood the risks or put additional thought into which college they choose based on post-graduation personal finances? I'm joined now by phone by Jay Sukits, Clinical Assistant Professor of Business Administration at the Katz School of Business at the University of Pittsburgh, to talk about how an understanding of personal finance early on can change the face of student debt. Jay Sukits, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, good.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can always reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. We'd like to hear from you if you are a parent of a high school senior considering how to finance college, or a college student with a cautionary tale about ending up deep in debt. Jay Sukits, let me ask you the question. Would students and cosigners be less willing to take tens of thousands of dollars in student loans if they really understood the risks?
Well, I think there's not only risks, there are, and perhaps there are risks in the decisions, but the decisions that people make before they take those loans out and before they co-sign them play an awful lot of influence on what ultimately happens to those loans. Just as an example, the most basic thing I suppose we could think about is that if you take out a lot of debt, and as you said, Pennsylvania is very high. In fact, the last figures I saw were 29,000 plus. Pennsylvania is number two in the nation in terms of the average amount of student debt per student. And about 70% of all students have student debt. So probably the most basic thing is, if I'm going to take out all this debt, or if I'm going to co-sign for this, what kind of job am I going to be able to get? And how much money am I going to be able to make? Because I'm going to have to pay this back. And the interesting thing is, in almost every study that's done, it invariably shows that students and parents and their cosigners tend to overestimate two things. They tend to overestimate the student's ability to get a job, and then they tend to overestimate how much the student is going to make once they do get a job. And those are two really important factors in making that initial decision of how much debt am I going to take out, and do I want to sign for this, and effectively, can we pay it back? Because sometimes it means parents and grandparents.
Mm. You know, there are probably plenty of listeners asking the question, how did we get into this mess? And I think you've answered it to some extent, but in addition to maybe lacking the foresight or not thinking ahead about what are my chances of employment when I graduate and how much am I going to make and how much can I afford to put toward paying off this loan, what kind of interest am I looking at, and as that compounds, what kind of added debt is there? But just how does this snowball effect happen? How do so many people just not think about it ahead of time?
Well, one of the things, and this is, I have to tell you, this is purely anecdotal, but I've talked to an awful lot of students. In what I obviously do, I deal with a huge number of students and have over the years. And in speaking with an awful lot of students, there are decisions made when students determine what colleges they're going to go to and what majors they're going to take, that sometimes are made on a very, what I would call, visceral basis, very emotional basis. You know, I want to go here because I like this campus, or I want to study something because I just happen to like that subject. And all of that is fine, but the fact is that doesn't lend itself to planning, to financial planning, as to what you're going to do once you have these loans. And, you know, you see this all the time. As a matter of fact, Forbes magazine, which I think is, most people would think is one of the most legitimate business publications out there, tends to publish the kind of 10 worst and 10 best lists. And one of the things that was just published recently were the best degrees, most valuable degrees for getting a job, what the average starting salaries were, and the worst degrees for getting a job and what the average starting salaries were. And, you know, not to belabor a point or point out specifically what those really bad degrees are, I can tell you that the more students tend to focus on the soft subjects or the fine arts, not that there's anything wrong with those things, but the less likely they are to become employed and the less likely they are to make a substantial salary that will go into contributing to an immediately paying down student loans. So that sort of planning ahead of time is important. I think if you can write a check and pay for all your tuition, I say, you know, do whatever you want. But if you're going to take out a lot of student loans, and frankly, when you're graduating in Pennsylvania, you're graduating in the state with the second highest amount of student loan debt in the country, second only to New Hampshire, on a student-by-student basis, on a per capita basis, then you've got to be careful. You've got to be very careful in terms of how you plan and what you think you can do potentially to get a job. The other thing about this is the selection of schools is very important also. There is a real strong correlation between for-profit institutions and for example, the default rates on student loans. The default rate on for-profit institutions is almost it's over 1 out of 5 students that default. It's about 44% of those students that do not graduate. Whereas when you start looking at public institutions or private institutions, the graduation rates are much, much higher and the default rates are very low. For example, here in Pennsylvania, invariably the highest default rates are on the for-profit institutions. The lowest default rates are University of Pittsburgh, Penn State, and Temple. And I think what that shows is the more higher quality institution you go to, chances are you're going to get a better job. Chances are you're going to make more money. Chances are there are people there that are going to assist you in terms of your ability to graduate. And that's the kind of thing you have to look for and you have to think about.
We're talking with Pitt business professor Jay Sukits about college loan debt. If you have a comment or question, you can call us at 412-246-2002. We'd like to hear from you, 412-246-2002. Are you someone who is paying back college loan debt, paying off a loan? What advice do you have for people listening in? Also, if you're someone who is shopping around for a college and trying to figure out how to finance that, Jay Sukits is the individual who can offer you some advice in that regard, so you might want to take him up on that. 412-246-2002, our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. You can always reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Jay, how damaging is the residual effect of all of this to the economy?
Well, you know, the fact is this shoe has not fallen yet, but it is looming. We went through this terrible crisis that began at the end of 07 and then through 08 and 09, which was directly the result of defaults on mortgages because of the housing bubble. And there are many economists right now, and I'm watching this very closely myself, who think we might have a student loan bubble going on. We're just at about $1 trillion in student loans right now. Now, that's much, much less, obviously, than the residential mortgage market was. The residential mortgage market was at $14 trillion when all the defaults began to happen in subprime mortgages. But nonetheless, this is a huge number. This is a number that is actually larger than the amount of credit card debt outstanding. The amount of credit card debt outstanding is in the high $800 billions, and the amount of auto loan debt outstanding is about $700 billion. So it's a huge number, And there's a sort of a vicious cycle that goes on. The vicious cycle is the economy does not do well, and so jobs are harder to come by. On top of that, there are less taxes paid on a marginal basis, and so states like Pennsylvania begin to give less and less and less in aid to state schools and state-related schools. So those schools raise their tuition, and this is the sort of thing that has happened in Pennsylvania over the last few years to all the state-related schools, Pitt, Penn State, Temple, and Lincoln, and so the tuition goes up. Consequently, the students need more money. They need to go out and borrow money in order to meet those rising tuitions. And then in order to pay those back, you come right back to the job market again, where jobs are harder to come by, especially in the softer skills. Now, frankly, you know, if you graduate, if you have a degree in computer engineering, or if you have a degree in accounting or finance or a degree like that, you're going to get a job, and you're going to probably get a pretty good starting pay, as long as you did well, as long as you don't have horrible grades. But the flip side of that is, and I'm, you know, again, I'm not trying to call out some discipline here, but if you're graduating with a degree in fine arts or philosophy or religious studies, you're going to have a very difficult time getting a job, and the starting pays are much, much lower. So the more this kind of vicious cycle stays in place, the more default rates go up, and that's the real problem. When defaults go up, the amount of debt that is unpaid becomes greater and greater. The federal government has now done, they've stepped in, and they have begun to put forth programs by which some debt can be rationalized, whereby you might be able to renegotiate your payments or get a lower payment or wait a few years until you are making a substantial salary in order to pay it off. But the fact is, Congress passed a law in 1977 that does not allow student debt to be eliminated through bankruptcy. So, you know, you could declare personal bankruptcy and kind of eliminate, credit card debt or auto debt. You can't eliminate student debt. So there's all kinds of different problems that are involved in this. And as default rates go up, I think we could see some impact, especially across the board in both the availability of credit and
does that raise interest rates, Jay?
It doesn't. This is not linked as much to interest rates in the open market per se as mortgages are, because lenders, number one, have set different rates, and they set different rates on credit cards and car loans. The fact is, what's going to happen now is the federal government is going to be setting rates on these student loans. And the Obama administration has pretty much pledged to keep rates low on student loans. They've effectively taken over the whole lending of student loans. And so I don't know if it's going to have that much of an impact on raising rates.
There are a lot of people that want to talk to you. Again, our guest, Jay Sukits, Pitt business professor, and we're talking about student loans and student loan debt. Let's go to Alex in the Strip District with a suggestion. Alex, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
Hi, so I'm a student at CCAC on the Allegheny campus side of things, and I'm trying to work and pay my way through school as much as possible, you know, in the beginning before I transfer out of CCAC to maybe another university. And, you know, I think that my idea here is that, you know, a lot of my friends kind of got trapped in this feeling of you know, oh, I'm out of high school, I have to go straight into college, and I have to do nothing but school. But, I'm going to graduate with, you know, virtually no student debt and a resume of, like, me having worked through school. And I was wondering if there's any longitudinal study or anything done about whether or not that results in, you know, faster employment, or, you know, has anyone ever done, you know, run the numbers on the correlation for that? And then I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Alex, so that's an interesting question. And let's start with Alex talking about how A, you don't need to go right into college out of high school. You could take some time to maybe build up some credit or make some money And also, you can maybe go to a community college for the first couple of years and then transfer to something that's a little more expensive. Is that a good approach, Jay?
Frankly, I have advocated those types of approaches for a number of students thinking about going to college. Although I will say, if you look at the statistics, it's very interesting because the default rates, and I use default rates only because it's a way to look at the success or non-success of using certain avenues to get second post-secondary education. Community college rates, pretty much across the board, especially in Pennsylvania, community college default rates are quite high. They're actually up around 8% or 9%. What that tells me is that there's perhaps a failure to graduate rate in community colleges that's much, much higher than perhaps in traditional four-year colleges. The route of going to a community college, let's say to CCAC, and being successful at it, getting good grades, and then transferring to a place like University of Pittsburgh, because we have a lot of students that do that, I think that's a great way to go. You will certainly pay a much, much, much lower tuition in your first 2 years while you're at the community college. You'll get a pretty good general background in academics, although I will tell you it won't be as rigorous as going to a four-year college. When students come from community college and they come with very good backgrounds and good grades to a place like the University of Pittsburgh, they're almost in shock for a while to see how much more rigorous and how much more they have to study once they get to a place like Pitt or to Penn State. But having said that, that's a very good route to go from an economical standpoint. And, you know, the other route, and frankly, I don't know that a lot of students think about this, but there are ways to go to have your tuition paid for. For example, if you can qualify physically and with good grades in high school, et cetera, the military will pay literally your whole college education through ROTC scholarships. And this doesn't mean that you will immediately, when you graduate, be shipped off to Iraq or Afghanistan or something like that. In fact, many jobs in the military are very, very tied into what people study in college. There are finance people, there are logistics people, all sorts of things that tie into the disciplines in the military. And then, of course, taking some time off to work and saving money, or going in the military and tapping into the GI Bill is another good way to do it. I find in talking to students, and I think this is true pretty much across the board, that students feel a great amount of peer pressure, both in high school and in college, to go to a certain kind of school, something with a sort of a prestigious name. And then once they're in college, I think they have some peer pressure on them also to sort of major in certain things or get a certain kind of job when they get out. And so I sometimes think those reactions and those kind of emotional and peer pressure tends to cloud good planning and good thinking.
Let's go to Joe in Butler with a question. Joe, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to know how much does the student's motivation and ambition have to do with getting a job? For example, clearly if you go into the sciences, that says something about you in terms of your choices and your work ethic. If you go into the humanities, something else, they're all great degrees, but isn't it the case that even if you get a degree in the humanities, a lot of it would have to do after graduation with your own motivation and ambition, not so much the degree itself, or not only the degree itself?
Jay, what do you say to Joe's question or Joe's observation there about student ambition and his question about how much it contributes to getting a job as opposed to their major degree?
I have to tell you, Paul, I couldn't hear his question. So could you just paraphrase it for me, please?
Again, Joe, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
If you could, can you hear Joe now?
I can't hear him at all.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry. Well, then let me paraphrase it for you. Joe, thank you for the question. Again, his question is about how much student ambition contributes to getting a job as opposed to their major and their degree.
Well, I think that's certainly a factor. I see students every day who market themselves. I mean, they literally go out and market themselves. They network. And they wind up working for companies that don't even come in to recruit, for example, at a place like the University of Pittsburgh, even though we get dozens and dozens of companies, great companies that recruit at Pitt. So that plays a very, very large role. How much you network, how much you market yourself, internships that you have, frankly, here's the problem with it, though. You can be really aggressive, and you can really be great in your networking, et cetera. But if you're studying certain kinds of disciplines, just as an example, if you're studying business, your opportunities to – and I hear this from students across the board. If you're studying business, your opportunities to access networking, internships – and just meeting people who can hire you, those opportunities are much broader than, frankly, if you're doing something like studying philosophy. And again, I'm not knocking philosophy, but you're not going to have the access to things like job fairs, career fairs, networking opportunities, luncheons, dinners, all sorts of things that you would if you were in a discipline like engineering, like a business, like economics, and so that can be a bit of a hindrance.
Right, and so what you're saying is that there's a demand for certain kinds of people who are trained in business or technology, and certainly that's something for students to consider. And yet there are people like our next caller here, Anne, who is an artist, and so there are these people that are concerned about the things that they're passionate about. Anne, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks very much. I'm an artist and an educator, and I've been paying my student loans for over 10 years now and don't see any end in sight. However, I find it very disturbing that one's choice of a major should be based solely on our finances, which discounts half or more of our civilization's knowledge. Not only the humanities, but probably a good deal of science. When I'm in my 60s, and I went back to college, I went to get my master's degree late in my life, but I always felt that going to college, the way I was brought up, was about developing the whole person, becoming a citizen and a productive member of society, not just becoming employed.
That's a point that we hear quite often, Jay, and it speaks to the idea that if you're simply going to college to get a job, you might as well just go to a trade school.
Right.
I would say probably not.
Okay.
Because the trade schools, and I'm just speaking objectively, the trade schools, the for-profit schools, are the ones that have the absolute lowest graduation rates. They have the highest dropout rates. They have the highest default rates on student loans. I would say, frankly, that there's all sorts of ways to have a really good, well-rounded education and still make yourself marketable. I'll give you an example. At a place like the University of Pittsburgh, you can do a dual major. You can major in fine arts or art history or philosophy or something like that and do a dual major in business. Or you can, and frankly, that may seem like, well, gee, you know, I'm sort of giving up my passion for something else, but you're not, because everything pretty much revolves around whether it's a nonprofit institution or a for-profit institution, revolves around some kind of support with either money or, you know, selling something. You've got to be able to do that. If you work for the Carnegie Museum, for the museum systems, for example, and you're an art, you're in art history, the museums still have to raise money, and they have to do it through donations, and you know, if you're an administrator, you have to learn how to do that. So there's no reason why several disciplines cannot be combined. I think
so. So what you're saying is that you can major in something and that's maybe a little more practical, but maybe minor in the thing that you're passionate about.
Or you can do a dual major, major in both. Students do that all the time. I've had students in my finance classes who are dual majors in sociology and business, or dual majors in economics and business, or philosophy and business. I've actually had some students have a triple major, believe it or not. I myself, many years ago, when I went through undergrad, I was passionate about economics and politics. So I had a dual major in economics and political science, and I had a minor. I minored in mathematics. There's all sorts of ways to structure those things to make yourself more marketable. And frankly, you know, if let's say you major in art history, and your goal, your passion is to work in an art gallery, wouldn't it be great if you had a degree in business also, where somebody could say, hey, not only does this person understand art, but this person could help me run my gallery as well.
So what you're saying is, so this is one answer to the question that brought about this whole segment in the first place, which is this is one way to get out there and be able to pay off those student loans.
Well, it's what it does. It's I think it's even broader than that. The goal of just paying off your student loans is important, but I think the more important goal is to get out there, you know, get a job, make a contribution to society. That's really important. You know, it was very interesting that during the kind of the height of the Occupy movement that was going on, we saw interview after interview after interview of the occupiers saying things like, well, I went to college and you know, I thought I was going to get a job. Now I can't get a job. I actually spent half a day roaming around Occupy Pittsburgh talking to people downtown, and it was very interesting doing that because I think what you see is there are a couple of things that occur. Number one,
Jay, if you can sum this up quickly, because we need to move on here
up
the segment.
Look, I would say this, Paul: don't not pursue your passion. I think people need to pursue their passion, but make yourself marketable, get really good grades, and combine it with something practical, and you'll do really well.
Jay Sukits is clinical assistant professor of business administration at the Katz School of Business. Jay, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Paul. Always.
Coming up, our sports guy Bob Dvorak joins us to talk about the high-flying Penguins when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.